Well, that one man is Elijah David, minister of the 12th hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of Mount Zion at the 12th hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is March 2, 2017, or it is Vidar 4, 2020. We'll start our first service today with a song entitled, Draw Me Now, Holy Spirit. Draw Me Now, Holy Spirit, by Elijah David. For Yahweh, Restoration Part 26. We're on page 728. It's Visions of Future Glory. We're going to finish this up in a few minutes. It says, He will swallow up death in victory, and Yahweh Elohim will wipe away tears from off all faces, and rebuke his people shall he take away from off the earth, for the Yahweh has spoken it. Isaiah 35:3-4, 25:8. And as the prophet beholds the Yahweh of glory descending from heaven with all the holy angels to gather the remnant church from among the nations of the earth, he hears the waiting ones unite and the exultant cry, Lo, this is our Elohim, our Yahshua, we have waited for him, and he will save us. This is Yahshua, we have waited for him. We will be glad and rejoice in his salvation. Isaiah 25:9. The voice of the Son of Yahweh is heard calling forth the sleeping saints, and as the prophet beholds them coming from the prison house of death, he exclaims, The dead men shall live together with my dead body shall they arise. Awake and shine, ye that dwell in the dust, for thy dew is as the dew of the herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing, Isaiah 26:19, 35:5-6. And the visions of the prophet, those who have triumphed over sin, and the grave are now seen happy in the presence of their Maker, talking freely with him as a man talked with Yahweh in the beginning. Be ye glad that Yahweh bids them, and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing and her people a joy. And I will rejoice in Jerusalem and joy in my people. And the voice of weeping shall be no more heard in her, nor the voice of crying. The inhabitant shall not say, I am sick. The people that dwell therein shall be forgiven their iniquity. In the wilderness shall water break out, and streams in the desert. And the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree. And an highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it. But it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, though fools shall not err therein. Speak ye comfortably unto Jerusalem, and cry unto her, that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she hath received of Yahweh's hand double for all her sin. Isaiah 65:18, 19, 33:24, 35:6-7, 55:13, 35:8, and 40:2. As the prophet beholds the redeemed dwelling in the city of Yahweh, free from sin and from all marks of the curse, in a rapture he exclaimed, Rejoice ye with Jerusalem, be glad with her, all ye that love her, rejoice for joy with her. Vomit shall no more be heard in thy land, wasting nor destruction within thy borders, but thou shalt call thy walls salvation, and thy gates praise. For the sun shall be no more thy light by the day, neither for the brightness shall the moon give light unto thee. But the Yahweh shall be unto thee an everlasting light, and thy Elohim thy glory. Thy sun shall no more go down, neither shall thy moon withdraw itself, and the Yahweh shall be thine everlasting light, and the days of thy mourning shall be ended. Thy people also shall be all righteous. They shall inherit the land forever, the branch of my planting, the work of my hand, that I may be glorified. Isaiah 66:10, 60:18-21. For the prophet caught the sound of the music there and song, with such music and song as save in the visions of Yahweh, no mortal ear has heard or mind can see. For the ransom of the Yahweh shall return and come unto Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, thanksgiving, and the voice of melody, as well the singers as the players on the instruments shall be there. They shall lift up their voice. They shall sing for the majesty of the Yahweh, Isaiah 35:10, 51:3, Psalms 87:7, Isaiah 24:14. And the earth made new the redeemed will engage in the occupation and pleasure that brought happiness unto Adam and Eve in the beginning. The Eden life will be lived, the life in the garden and field. They shall build houses and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit, they shall not plant and another eat, for as the days of a tree are the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the work of their hand. Isaiah 65:21-22. Now that's right here in this earth. Even before probation closes, here in the 12th hour. People, when they read this, they think this is after we get in the earth made new, which this is going to be the earth made new. But it's going to be done right here in this 12th hour, right before our eyes. There, every power will be developed, every capability increased, their grandest enterprises will be carried forward, the loftiest aspirations will be reached, the highest ambition realized, and still there will appear new heights to surmount, new wonders to admire, new truths to comprehend, fresh objects of study to call forth the powers of the body and mind and soul. The prophets unto whom these great scenes were revealed longed to understand their full import. They inquired and searched diligently, searching what or what manner of time the Spirit of Yahshua, which was in them, did signify. Unto whom it was revealed that not unto themselves, but unto us they did minister the things which are now reported unto you. 1 Peter 1:10-12. Unto us who are standing on the very verge of the fulfillment of what deep moment, what living interest are these delineations of the things to come, events for which, since our first parents turned their steps from Eden, Yahweh's children have watched and waited, longed and prayed. Fellow pilgrims, we are still amid the shadows and a turmoil of the earthly activities, but soon our Savior is to appear to bring deliverance and rest. Let us by the faith behold the blessed hereafter as pictured by the hand of Yahweh. He who died for the sins of the world is opening wide the gates of the paradise unto all who believe on him. Soon the battle will have been fought, the victory won. Soon we shall see him in whom our hope of the eternal life are centered, and in his presence the trials and suffering of this life will seem as nothing unless. For the former things shall not be remembered, nor come into mind. Cast not away, therefore, your confidence, which hath great recompense of the reward. For you have need of the patience, that after you have done the will of Yahweh, you might receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he that shall come will come, and will not tarry. Israel shall be saved. With an everlasting salvation, ye shall not be ashamed nor confounded, war without end. Isaiah 65:17. Hebrews 10:35-37. Isaiah 45:17. Look up, and let your faith continually increase. Let this faith guide you along the narrow path that leads through the gates of the city and to the great beyond, the wide, unbounded future of the glory that is for the redeemed. Be patient, therefore, the brethren, until the coming of the Yahweh, of the Yahshua. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it, until he receive the early and the latter rain. But ye also, be ye also patient, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Yahshua draweth nigh. James 5:7-8. For the nations of the saved will know no other law than the law of heaven. All will be a happy united family, clothed with the garments of praise and thanksgiving. Over the scene the morning stars will sing together, and the sons of Yahweh will shout for joy, while Elohim and Yahshua will unite in the proclaiming, there shall be no more sin, and neither shall there be any more death. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith Yahweh. For the glory of the Yahweh shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. The Yahshua Messiah will cause righteousness and praise to spring forth before all the nation. In that day shall the Yahshua the host be for a crown of glory and for a diadem of beauty unto the residue of his people. For the Yashir shall comfort Zion, he will comfort all her waste places, and he will make her wilderness like Eden, and her desert like the garden of the Yahweh. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, the excellency of Carmel and Sharon. Thou shalt no more be termed forsaken, neither shall thy land any more be termed desert, but thou shalt be called by my delight, and thy land Beulah. As the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall the Yahweh rejoice over thee. Isaiah 66:23, 40:5, Isaiah 61:11, 28:5, 51:3, and 35:2, 62:4, and 5. This brings us to the end of this book, Prophets and Kings. We have just finished a series here. We went into 26 the periods, and let's see where we continue now from here. Patriarchs and Prophets, Chapter 1, Why Was Sin Permitted? Yahweh is love. His nature, his law is love. It ever has been, it ever will be, the high and lofty one that inhabits eternity, whose ways are everlasting, changes not. With him is no variableness, not a shadow of turning. Every manifestation of the creative power is an expression of his infinite love. For the sovereignty of Yahweh involves fullness of the blessings unto all the created beings, the psalmist said. Strong is thy hand, and high is thy right hand. Righteousness and judgment are the foundation of thy throne. Mercy and truth go before thy face. Blessed is the people that know the joyful sound. They walk, O Yahweh, in the light of thy countenance. In thy name do they rejoice all the day, and in thy righteousness are they exalted. For thou art the glory of their strength. For our shield belongeth unto the Yahweh, and our king unto the Holy One. The history of the great conflict between good and evil, from the time it first began in heaven until the final overthrow of the rebellion and the total eradication of sin, is also a demonstration of Yahweh's unchanging love. For the sovereign of the universe was not alone in his work of the beneficent. He had an associate, a co-worker, who can appreciate his purposes and can share his joy in giving happiness unto created beings. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word is with Yahweh, and the Word is Yahweh. The same was in the beginning with Yahweh. Yahshua, the Word, the only begotten of Yahweh, was one with the Eternal Father, one in nature, in character, in purpose, the only being that could enter into all the counsels and purposes of Yahweh. His name shall be called Wonderful Counselor of the Mighty Yahweh, of the Everlasting Father, as the Prince of Peace. His going forth has been from of old, from everlasting, and the Son of Yahweh declares concerning himself, Yahweh possessed me in the beginning of his way. Before his works of old, I was set up from everlasting. When he appointed the foundation of the earth, then I was by him, as one brought up with him, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him. The Father wrought by his Son in the creation of all heavenly beings. By him were all things created, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities and our powers. All things were created by him and for him. Angels are Yahweh's ministers, radiant with the light, ever flowing from his presence, and speeding on rapid wings to execute his will. But the Son, the anointed of Yahweh, the express image of his person, the brightness of his glory, upholding all things by the word of his power, holds supremacy over them all. A glorious high throne from the beginning was the place of his sanctuary. a scepter of righteousness, the scepter of his kingdom. Honor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. Mercy and truth go before his face. The law of love being the foundation of the government of Yahweh, the happiness of all intelligent beings depends upon their perfect accord with his great principles of the righteousness. Yahweh desires from all his creatures the service of love, service that springs from an appreciation of his character. He takes no pleasure in a forced obedience, and to all he grants freedom of the will, that they may render him voluntary service. So long as all created beings acknowledge the allegiance of the love, there was perfect harmony throughout the universe of Yahweh. It was the joy of the heavenly host to fulfill the purpose of their Creator, for they delighted in reflecting his glory and showing forth his praise. And while love to Elohim was supreme, love for one another was confiding and unselfish. There was no note of discord to mar the celestial harmonies, but a change came over this happy state. There was one who perverted the freedom that Elohim had granted unto his creatures. Sin originated with him, who, next to Yahshua, had been most honored of Yahweh, and was highest in the power and glory among the inhabitants of heaven. Lucifer, son of the morning, was first of the covering cherub, holy and undefiled. He stood in the presence of the great Creator, and the ceaseless beams of the glory enshrouding the eternal throne rested upon him. Thus saith Yahweh Elohim, Thou sealest up the sun, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of Yahweh. Every precious stone was thy covering. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Thou wast upon the holy mountain of Yahweh. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created till iniquity was found in thee. Little by little, Lucifer came to indulge the desire for self-exaltation. The scripture says, Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. Thou hast said in thine heart, I will exalt my throne above the stars of Elohim. I will be like the Most High. Through all his glory was from Yahweh, this mighty angel came to regard it as pertaining to himself. Not content with his position, though honored above the heavenly host, he ventured to cover the homage due unto the Creator. Instead of seeking to make Yahweh supreme in the affections and allegiance of all created beings, it was his endeavor to secure their service and loyalty unto himself, and coveting the glory with which the Infinite Father had invested his Son. This prince of the angels aspired to the power that was the prerogative of Yahshua alone. Now the perfect harmony of the heaven was broken. Lucifer's disposition to serve himself instead of his Creator aroused a feeling of apprehension when observed by those who considered that the glory of the Father would be supreme. In the heavenly council, the angels pleaded with Lucifer, the son of Elohim, present him before him the greatness, the goodness, and the justice of the Creator, and the sacred, unchanging nature of his law. Yahweh himself had established the order of heaven, and in departing from it, Lucifer would dishonor his Maker and bring ruin upon himself. But the warning given in the infinite love and mercy only aroused a spirit of resistance. Lucifer allowed his jealousy of the Yahshua to prevail and became the more determined. to dispute this supremacy of the Son of Yahweh, thus impeaching the wisdom and love of the Creator, had become the purpose of this prince of the angels. Under this object, he was about to bend the energies of that mastermind, which next to Yahshua was first among the host of Yahweh, that he who would have the will of all his creatures free, left none unguarded unto the bewildering sophistry, by which rebellion would seek to justify itself. Before the great contest should open, all were to have a clear presentation of his will, whose wisdom and goodness were the spring of all their joy. For the King of the universe summoned the heavenly host before him, that in their presence he might send forth the true position of his Son and show the relation he sustained unto all created beings. The Son of Elohim shared the Father's throne and the glory of the eternal self-existent one encircled both. About the throne gathered the holy angels a vast unnumbered throne, 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands, the most exalted angels as ministers and subjects, rejoicing in the light that fell upon them from the presence of the deity before the assembled inhabitants of the heaven. The king declared that none but the Yahshua, the only begotten of the Father, could fully enter into his purposes, and unto him it was committed to execute the mighty counsels of his will. The Son of Yahweh had wrought the Father's will in the creation of all the hosts of heaven. And this says that, and unto him, as well as unto Yahweh, their homage and allegiance were due. Yahshua was still to exercise divine power in the creation of the earth and its inhabitants, but in all this he would not seek power or exaltation for himself, contrary unto Elohim's plan, but would exalt the Father's glory and execute his purposes of the beneficence and love. For the angels joyfully acknowledged the supremacy of Yahshua, and prostrating themselves before him, poured out their love and adoration. Lucifer bowed with them, but in his heart there was a strange, fierce conflict. Truth, justice, and loyalty were struggling against envy and jealousy. For the influence of the holy angels seemed for a time to carry him with them, as songs of the praise ascended in the melodious strains swelled by the thousands of the glad voices. The spirit of the evil seemed vanquished. Unutterable love thrilled his entire being. His soul went out in the harmony with the sinless worshippers in the love unto the Father and the Son. But again he was filled with pride in his own glory, for his desire for the supremacy returned, and envy of the Yahshua was once more indulged, for the high honors conferred upon the Lucifer were not appreciated as Elohim's special gift, and therefore called forth no gratitude unto his Creator, for he gloried in his brightness and exaltation and aspired to be equal with Yahweh. He was beloved and reverenced by the heavenly host. Angels delighted to execute his commands, and he was clothed with the wisdom and glory above them all. Yet the Son of Yahweh was exalted above him as one in power and authority with the Father. He shared the Father's counsels, while Lucifer did not thus enter into the purpose of Yahweh. Why, questioned this mighty angel, should Yahshua have the supremacy? Why is he honored above Lucifer? Leaving his place in the immediate presence of the Father, Lucifer went forth to diffuse the spirit of the discontent among the angels. He worked with the mysterious secrecy, and for a time concealed his real purpose under an appearance of reverence for Yahweh, he began to insinuate doubts concerning the laws that govern heavenly beings, intimating that though laws might be necessary for the inhabitants of the world, angels, being more exalted, needed no such restraint, for their own wisdom was a sufficient guide. They were not beings that could bring dishonor unto the Father. All their thoughts were holy. It was no more possible for them than for Yahweh himself to err. For the exaltation of the Son of Yahweh as equal with the Father was represented as an injustice to Lucifer, who, it was claimed, was also entitled unto reverence and honor. If this prince of the angels could but attain unto his true exalted position, great good would accrue to the entire host of the heaven, for it was his object to secure freedom for all. But now, even the liberty which they had hitherto enjoyed was at an end, for an absolute ruler had been appointed them, and under his authority all must pay homage. Such were the subtle deceptions that through the wiles of Lucifer was fast obtaining in the heavenly courts. There has been no change in the position or authority of the Yashir. Lucifer's envy and misrepresentation and his claims to equality with Yashir had made necessary a statement of the true position of the Son of Yahweh. But this had been the same from the beginning. Many of the angels were, however, blinded by the Lucifer's deception. Taking advantage of the loving, loyal trust reposed in him by the holy beings under his command, he had so awfully instilled into their mind his own distrust and discontent that his agency was not discerned. Lucifer had presented the purposes of Yahweh in a false light, misconstruing and distorting them to excite dissent and dissatisfaction. He kindly drew his hearers on to give utterances unto their feelings. Then these expressions were repeated by him when it would serve his purpose, as evidence that the angels were not fully in harmony with the government of Elohim. While claiming for himself perfect loyalty unto Yahweh, he urged that changes in the order and laws of the heaven were necessary for the stability of the divine government. Thus, while working to excite opposition to the law of Yahweh, and to instill his own discontent into the minds of the angels under him, he was ostensibly seeking to remove dissatisfaction and to reconcile disaffected angels to the order of heaven, while secretly fomenting a discord and a rebellion. He, with consummate craft, caused it to appear as his sole purpose to promote loyalty and to preserve harmony and peace. The spirit of the dissatisfaction thus kindled was doing its baleful work. While there was no open outbreak, division of the feeling and perceptible grew up among the angels. There were some who looked with favor upon Lucifer's insinuations against the government of Yahweh, although they had hitherto been in the perfect harmony with the order which Elohim had established. They were now discontented and unhappy because they could not penetrate his unsearchable counsels. They were dissatisfied with his purpose in exalting Yahshua. These did raise a second Lucifer's demand for the equal authority with the Son of Yahweh. But angels, who were loyal and true, maintained the wisdom and justice of the divine decree and endeavored to reconcile this this affected being to the will of Yahweh. Yahshua was the son of Yahweh. He had been one with him before the angels were called into existence. As in before Lucifer was created, he was one with the Father. He had ever stood at his right hand of the Father. His supremacy is so full of blessing unto all who came under its benignant control had not heretofore been questioned. For the harmony of the heaven had never been interpreted. Wherefore should there now be discord? For the loyal angels could see only terrible consequences from this dissension. And with the earnest entreaty, they counsel the disaffected ones to renounce their purpose and prove themselves loyal unto Yahweh by the fidelity unto his government. In the great mercy, according unto his divine character, Yahweh bore along with the Lucifer. For the spirit of discontent and disaffection had never before been known in heaven. It was a new element, strange, mysterious, unaccountable. Lucifer himself had not at first been acquainted with the real nature of his feeling. For a time he had feared to express the workings and imaginings of his mind, yet he did not dismiss them. He did not see whether he was drifting. But such efforts as infinite love and wisdom only could devise were made to convince him of his error. His disaffection was proved to be without cause, and he was made to see what would be the result of the persisting in the revolt. Lucifer was convinced that he was in the wrong. He saw that Yahweh is righteous in all his ways and holy in all his works, that the divine statutes are just, and that he ought to acknowledge them as such before all heaven. Had he done this, he might have saved himself and many angels. He had not at that time fully cast off his allegiance unto Yahweh, although he had left his position as covering cherub. Yet if he had been willing to return unto Yahweh, acknowledging the Creator's wisdom and satisfied to fill the place appointed him in the Elohim's great plan, he would have been reinstated in his office, for the time had come for a final decision. He must fully yield unto the divine sovereignty, or place himself in the open rebellion. He nearly reached the decision to return, but pride forbade him. It was too great a sacrifice for one who had been so highly honored to confess that he had been in error, that his imaginings were false, and to yield to the authority which he had been working to prove unjust. A compassionate Creator, in a yearning pity for the Lucifer and his followers, was seeking to draw them back from the abyss of the ruin into which they were about to plunge. But his mercy was misinterpreted. Lucifer pointed to the long-suffering Yahweh as an evidence of his own superiority, an indication that the king of the universe would yet accede to his term. If the angels would stand friendly with him, he declared, they could yet gain all that they desired. He persistently defended his own course and fully commit himself unto the great controversy against his Maker. Thus it was that Lucifer, the light-bearer, the sharer of the Yahweh's glory, the attendant of his throne, by the transgression became a Satan, the adversary of Yahweh, and holy beings, and the destroyer of those whom heaven had committed unto his guidance and guardianship. Rejecting with disdain the arguments and entreaties of the loyal angels, he denounced them as deluded slaves. For the preference shown unto Yahshua, he declared an act of injustice. both unto himself and unto all the heavenly host, and announced that he would no longer submit to this invasion of his rights and theirs. He would never again acknowledge the supremacy of Yahshua. He had determined to claim the honor which should have been given him, and take command of all who would become his followers. And he promised those who would enter his ranks a new and better government, under which all would enjoy freedom. Great numbers of the angels signified their purpose to accept him as their leader. Flattened by the favor with which his advances were received, he hoped to win all the angels under his side to become equal with Yahweh himself and to be obeyed by the entire host of heaven. Still, the loyal angels urged him and his sympathizers to submit unto Yahweh, and they set before them the inevitable result should they refuse. He who had created them could overthrow their power and signally punish their rebellious daring. No angel could successfully oppose the law of Yahweh, which was as sacred as himself. They warned all to close their ears against the Lucifer's deceptive reasoning, and urged him and his followers to seek the presence of Yahweh without delay and confess the error or to question his wisdom and authority. Many were disposed to heed this counsel, to repent of their disaffection, and seek to be again received into favor with the Father and his Son. But Lucifer had another deception ready. The mighty revolter now declared that the angels who had united with him had gone too far to return, that he was acquainted with the divine law and knew that Elohim would not forgive. Okay, there's your Ten Commandments. He declared that all who should submit unto the authority of heaven would be stripped of their honor, degraded from their position. For himself, he was determined never again to acknowledge the authority of Yahshua. For the only course remaining for him and his followers, he said, was to assert their liberty and gain by force the rights which had not been willingly accorded them. So far as Satan himself was concerned, it was true that he had now gone too far to return, but not so with those who had been blinded by his deception. Under them, the counsel and entreaties of the loyal angels opened a door of hope. And had they heeded the warning, they might have broken away from the snare of Satan, but pride, love for their leader, and the desire for the unrestricted freedom were permitted to bear sway, and the pleadings of the divine love and mercy were finally rejected.
Okay, hurry up.
Yahweh permitted Satan to carry forward his work and tell the spirit of the disaffection ripen into active revolt. It is necessary for his plans to be fully developed, that their true nature and tendency might be seen by all. Lucifer, as the anointed cherub, had been highly exalted. He was greatly loved by the heavenly beings, and his influence over them was strong. Yahweh's government included not only the inhabitants of heaven, but of all the worlds that he had created, and Lucifer had concluded that if he could carry the angels of heaven with him in the rebellion, he could carry also all the world. He had artfully presented his side of the question, employing sophistry and fraud to secure his objects. His power to deceive was very great. By disguising himself in a cloak of falsehood, he had gained an advantage. All his acts were so clothed with mystery that it is difficult to disclose to the angels the true nature of his work until fully developed. It could not be made to appear the evil thing it was. His disaffection would not be seen in to the rebellion, to be rebellion. Even the loyal angels could not fully discern his character or see to what his work was leading. Lucifer had at first so conducted his temptation that he himself stood uncommitted. The angels whom he could not bring fully to his side, he accused of indifference to the interest of heavenly beings. The very work which he himself was doing, he charged upon the loyal angels. It was his policy to perplex with subtle arguments concerning the purposes of Yahweh. Everything that was simple, he shrouded in mystery. And by the artful perversion, cast doubt upon the plainest statements of the Yahweh. And his high position, so closely connected with the divine government, gave greater force unto his representation. Yahweh could employ only such means as were consistent with the truth and righteousness. Satan could use what Elohim could not, flattery and deceit. He had sought to falsify the word Yahweh and had misrepresented his plan of the government, claiming that the Yahweh was not just in imposing laws upon the angels, that in the requiring submission and obedience from his creatures, he was seeking merely to the exaltation of himself. It was therefore necessary to demonstrate before the inhabitants of heaven and of all the world that Yahweh's government is just, his law perfect. Satan had made it appear that he himself was seeking to promote the good of the universe. The true character of the usurper and his real object must be understood by all. He must have time to manifest himself by his wicked works. The discord which his own course had caused in heaven, Satan charged upon the government of Yahweh. All evil he declared to be the result of the divine administration. He claimed that it was his own object to improve upon the statutes of the Yahweh. Therefore, Elohim permitted him to demonstrate the nature of his claim, to show the working out of his proposed changes in the divine law. Now, when was the divine law again come under attack for changes? At the cross, by the Pharisees. They wrote 613 new laws to add to the law of Moses, which is perfect. They claim that they needed those supplements to make Yahweh's law perfect. His own work must condemn him. Satan had claimed from the first that he was not in rebellion. The whole universe must see the receiver en masse. Even when he was cast out of heaven, infinite wisdom did not destroy Satan. Since only the service of the love can be acceptable unto Elohim, the allegiance of his creatures must rest upon a conviction of his justice and benevolence. The inhabitants of heaven and of the worlds being unprepared to comprehend the nature or consequences of the sin, could not then have seen the justice of Yahweh and the destruction of Satan. Had he been immediately blotted out of existence, some would have served Yahweh from fear rather than from the love. The influence of the deceiver would not have been fully destroyed, nor would the spirit of the rebellion have been utterly eradicated. For the good of the entire universe, through the ceaseless ages, he must more fully develop his principles, that his charges against the divine government might be seen in their true light by all created beings, and that the justice and mercy of Yahweh and the immutability of his law might be forever placed beyond all question. Satan's rebellion was to be a lesson unto the universe through all coming ages. a perpetual testimony unto the nature of sin and its terrible results. For the working out of Satan's rule, its effects upon both men and angels, will show what must be the fruit of setting aside the divine authority. It would testify that with the existence of the Elohim's government is bound up the well-being of all the creatures he has made. Thus, the history of this terrible experiment of rebellion was to be a perpetual safeguard unto all holy beings, to prevent them from being deceived as to the nature of the transgression, to save them from committing sin and suffering its penalty. He that ruleth in the heavens is the one who sees the end from the beginning, the one before whom the mysteries of the past and the future are alike outspread, and who beyond the woe and darkness and ruin that sin has wrought beholds the accomplishment of his own purposes of the love and blessing. Though clouds and darkness are round about him, righteousness and judgment are the foundation of his throne, and this is the inhabitants of the universe, both loyal and disloyal, will one day understand. His work is perfect, for all his ways are judgment. A Yahweh of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he. Psalm 97:2, Revelation something, and then Deuteronomy 32:4. That's the end of chapter 1, entitled, Why Was Sin Permitted? We just like a few minutes, probably like about 7. Chapter number 2, the creation. By the word of Yahweh were the heavens made, and all his host of them by the breath of his mouth. For he spake, and it was, he commanded, and it stood fast. He laid the foundations of the earth, that it should not be removed forever. As the earth came forth from the hand of its maker, it was exceedingly beautiful. Its surface was diversified with the mountains, hills, and plains, interspersed with the noble rivers and lovely lakes. But the hills and mountains were not abrupt and rugged, abounding in the terrible steeps and frightful chasms, as they now do. For the sharp, ragged edges of the earth's rocky framework were buried beneath the fruitful soil, which everywhere produced a luxuriant growth of verdure. There were no loathsome swamps, nor barren deserts. Graceful shrubs and delicate flowers greeted the eye at every turn. The heights were crowned with the trees, more majestic than any that now exist. The air untainted by the foul Mysum was clear and healthy. The entire landscape outvied in the beauty of the decorated grounds of the proudest palace. For the angelic host viewed the scene with the delight and rejoiced at the wonderful works of the Yahweh. After the earth, with its teeming animal and vegetable life had been called into the existence, man, the crowning work of the Creator, and the one for whom the beautiful earth had been fitted up, was brought upon the stage of action. To him was given dominion over all that his eye could behold. For Yahweh said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over all the earth." So Yahweh created man in his own image. Male and female created he them. Here is clearly set forth the origin of the human race, and the divine record is so plainly stated that there is no occasion for the erroneous conclusion. For the Yahweh created man in his own image. Here is no mystery. There is no ground for the supposition that man was evolved by slow degrees of development from the lower forms of the animal or vegetable life. Such teaching lowers the great work of the Creator to the level of the man's narrow earthly conception. Men are so intent upon excluding Yahweh from the sovereignty of the universe that they degrade man and defraud him of the dignity of his origin. He who sits the starry worlds on high and tended with the delicate skill the flowers of the field, who fill the earth and the heavens with the wonders of his power, when he came to crown his work, his glorious work, to place one in the midst to stand as the ruler of the fair earth, did not fail to create a being worthy of the hand that gave him life. For the genealogy of our race is given by the inspiration traces back its origin, not unto a line of developing germs, mollusks, and quadrupeds, but to the great Creator. Though formed from the dust, Adam was a son of Yahweh. He was placed as Elohim's representative over the lower orders of the being. They cannot understand or acknowledge the sovereignty of Yahweh, yet they were made capable of loving and serving man. The psalmist says, "Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet, the beast of the field, and the fowl of the air, and whatsoever passes through the paths of the sea." Man was to bear Elohim's image, both in the outward resemblance and in character. Yahshua alone is the express image of the Father, but man was formed in the likeness of the Yahweh. His nature was in the harmony with the will of Yahweh. His mind was capable of the comprehending divine things. His affections were pure. His appetites and passions were under the control of reason. He was holy and happy in bearing the image of Yahweh and in the perfect obedience unto his will. A man came forth from the hand of his Creator. He was of the lofty stature and perfect symmetry. His countenance bore the ruddy tint of health and glowed with the light of life and joy. Adam's height was much greater than that of men who now inhabit the earth. Eve was somewhat less in stature, yet her form was noble and full of beauty. The sinless pair wore no artificial garments. They were clothed with a covering of light and glory, such as the angels wear. So long as they lived in obedience unto Yahweh, the robe of light continued to enshroud them. This brings a close. Let's set this out. You can contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song. I lead you to the rock that is higher than I, by the Elijah Davis, a song that I've written. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, I'll forever be. Lead me to the sun of everyone, and to set me free. Oh, the life in this world I have to live is better set me down. For the great heights I have to ascend, better down. Go lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's higher than I. Lead me to the place of the safest sea, lead me to look at the sky. Thank you.
shone bright with the heavenly lights of God. Sorry for the brightest fire of all, there's a wonderful stars of the moon. Leave me to the rock, go leave me to the ground. Leave me to the rocks that silent night. Leave me to the place of the Savior's feet. Leave me to the banks of the sky.
Oh yes, lead me to those mansions in the sky.